This podcast is produced by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President, simplifying a complex money world with investment programs to match a range of investment goals and life situations. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Invest Talk. This is our July 13th, 2017 edition of Invest Talk. And as always, we are here to help you become better than the average person who makes poor decisions and buys high, sells low. And we're here to help you kind of even out the troughs and valleys of investing and make that learning curve a little flatter. Right? And Invest Talk is a sounding board when you're looking for a second opinion on a particular stock or strategy or a certain investment asset class, whether you want to buy a home, refinance, how to consolidate debt, whatever it is, please feel free to share your questions, your doubts, your experiences with us. Now, one of the topics on the table today has to do with indexing, and I've talked from time to time about how people are over-indexed, but I'm going to talk about how people mess up indexing and how index funds and ETFs alone won't guarantee investment success, and not all indexes are created equal, or index funds are created equal. So you'll need to steer clear of these all-too-common indexing mistakes. That's one of our talking points today, but I also want to get to a few others. Like five things rich people confess to sacrificing to get rich. I think that'll be very interesting. It's more simple than you would imagine, but it's something that I think needs reiterating. And then retailers had a good day, and here's why. I'm going to talk about why retailers did so well today. And lastly, something somewhat related. Is Amazon getting so big that they're going to be subject to antitrust issues? We're going to talk about all that hopefully today. But before we do anything else, let's hear one of your talking points. Our listener line is 888-99-CHART. That's our anytime number. Are we going to go to a live call or are we going to go to... We're going to go to a live call. Okay. Let's go to James in New York. Are you in New York City?
I work in New York City, live in the suburbs.
Gotcha. Okay. I have family out there, so I'm out there regularly. What can I do for you?
I wanted to know, I'm in the process, and I just wanted to review, but I'm in the process of addressing some life insurance, mm-hmm. and I have absolutely, could not agree more with the position that, you and Steve usually have towards a term policy,
mm-hmm.
and I just wanted to also cover, under no circumstances should there be any reason for me to buy a policy that is represented as an investment vehicle that builds cash and so on and so forth. I generally want to stay away from that,
mm-hmm.
but I just wanted to know, should I do a bare bones, strictly death benefit policy? And if so, is there determining how much? I have a number in mind, an idea, but is there a better way to narrow that down?
Well, a lot of it has to do with what your family needs are. Does your wife work?
Yes.
Okay. Could she afford the mortgage on your house if you passed away?
Likely not.
Likely not. Okay. So you certainly would want to think about having enough to pay off that mortgage, or at least pay it down substantially where she could refinance it into a lower monthly payment and be able to afford it. I would probably go with the former. I would say just it's always nice for... a nice peace of mind if you ever do pass away to say at least your wife has a place to live and doesn't have to pay a mortgage. She can live in that house forever if she wants. So I think that would be number one, is pay off that mortgage. Do you have any kids?
No, not yet.
Okay. Do you plan to have kids?
Yes.
And you probably want to send them to college?
Yes, obviously. Right? All those things need to be covered as well. So.
Yeah, so covering college expenses, and probably a little bit of a buffer as well, any other major debts that you might have to pay off. So that's where I would go with it. I don't know, what were you thinking? How were you coming up with the number?
Yes. I mean, obviously the mortgage, I have taken into consideration. The whole kids to college thing, I have not really put much thought to that because I figured that I will address that when the time comes. So mm-hmm. if I have a mortgage that's at presently $350,000, I thought that maybe I would go with an even $500,000 policy to consider all those other things like the college and so forth.
Yeah, I don't think that's a bad number. I might bump that up a little bit, maybe to 750. A lot of it depends on what the cost difference is.
Right.
And, you know, I would say somewhere in that 500,000 to 750 number seems to be pretty good. Because, I mean, college tuition these days can be pretty expensive, right?
Sure.
So $150,000 buffer there for college. I don't know how many kids you plan to have, one, two, or three, or four, or five. I mean, who knows? But I would say... definitely 500 at least. I would probably think about 750.
And again, it should be a strictly term, no type of investment.
Exactly.
A lot of these have riders that are included, and I really want to stay away from that.
Yeah, there's no reason. Any of those all that savings that you'll have on those riders, you can put into IRAs and 401ks and Roth IRAs, etc., and put and stash that money away, and you'll do much better with that.
Yes, that's what I thought also. Mm-hmm. But okay, thank you.
All right, no problem. Thanks for calling. That was a great question. I love kind of broader questions, a little bit more financial planning, I guess, to a degree, which is you know, insurance, term life insurance is certainly important for those who have dependents, people that need your income and rely on you, whether that's a spouse or a child or maybe it's a niece or a nephew or whoever it is, and maybe it's a parent, could be. And being able to cover that with term life policy is something that I think everybody should be thinking about. 888-99-CHART is our number, 888-992-4278. That's how you get through and ask your question on today's show. Now, I want to share a very interesting quote from James Paulson. He's the chief investment strategist at Wells Capital Management. He says, "The new valuation range persisted for too long to simply ignore." This brings to mind another quote made by economist Irving Fisher about 84 years ago, who said, "Stock prices have reached what looks like a permanently high plateau." So this statement kind of smacks of the same thing from James Paulson, basically saying the overvaluation of the markets are here to stay, which to me is kind of worrisome. And I find the exact timing of market tops, it's impossible to know the exact timing, but it's pretty easy to line up enough factors to identify when extreme caution is warranted. And most time reliable factors to consider, like a hot IPO market, companies usually only go public when valuations are attractive, right, for them to sell. In today's market, it's a little different because there's a lot of private equity, so a lot of private equities are buying up some of these tech firms. And this is when massive amounts of companies are willing to sell big chunks of ownership to those who are aggressive, have a lot of liquidity. And I find this one kind of a warning sign. And that's what you're seeing today. So there are factors that can give you an idea when a market will bottom out as well. When there's no IPOs, when companies are issuing a ton of stock because they need to repair their balance sheet. And those bear phases then inevitably come. So looking for excessive pessimism and optimism can allow you opportunity to sell when things are so great that valuations are too high, and opportunities to buy in certain sectors or markets where just pessimism is too extreme. And I'm going to talk later about one of those markets right now, or one of the sectors in the market. So while the overall market can be frothy, there can be pockets of good values. So let's talk about it. What are you looking at? Is it one of those frothy markets, or is it in one of the areas of the market that those asset classes that look attractive? So that's what's on my mind. And I want to hear what's on yours. 888-99-CHART is our number. 888-992-4278 is how you get through. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein. We're glad you're with us for this Invest Talk. Are you feel familiar with the term recency bias? Recency bias is basically the tendency to think that trends and patterns we observe over the recent past. And when I say recent, I'm talking 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, sometimes even 10 years. Usually there's a recession within 10 years, but usually 3, 5, 7 years. People think that's going to continue for the next 3, 5, 7 years, and the odds are that's not true. And that's recency bias. Do you have questions about that or anything else financial? 888-99-CHART is out of get through right now. Let's go to Wendy in Chino Hills. How you doing, Wendy?
I'm doing good. How are you, Justin?
Doing well. What can I do for you?
I have a question today regarding how do you decide when to sell and the stock you bought, what factors do you consider before you sell a stock?
Well, we look at first thing we'll look at is valuation. Right. So we want to, and that's on the buy side and the sell side. We want to find companies that are cheap to buy, and then we line up the technical chart patterns to try to find the level to buy at. Right. And so that's the same thing on the sell side. So, I'll give one example is Philip Morris. Right. You know, we bought this late last year, and it had pretty solid valuation at that level, and technically we found some support levels and we bought it, right? Now it's rallied a ton and it's getting a little bit what we call overvalued, right? So from a fundamental perspective, it's overvalued. Now technically it's still relatively strong, but we are getting tighter out on it. We have a tighter stop. So if it breaks certain support levels, usually moving averages or previous pivot points, for example, Philip Morris had a little top in April at about 115. It pulled back a little bit, not enough for us to really sell it, then rallied to new highs. And so that 115 level is going to be support again. And so if it breaks 115, then we know, okay, probably things are breaking down a little more seriously and we want to sell it. So what you want to do is line up and figure out which one of your stocks are overvalued and then look for technical indicators that the uptrend that it's in, and probably is going to be in an uptrend if it's overvalued, is starting to either slow down or break completely, and then that's when I would sell.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you very much.
No problem, Wendy. Let's go to Nick in Hayward. How you doing, Nick?
Yeah, hi, Justin. Thanks for taking my call. Great show.
Hey, thanks for making it.
I like to know about Annaly Capital Management.
Okay.
Has a yield of 9.79%.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to take your view on is it sustainable or do you see it going away or what do you think?
Well, I would say that the dividend long term is not going to be it's not going to be sustainable simply because of the ups and downs of the mortgage market and the amount of debt that they have. Let me do this. I got to go to a quick break. We have a hard break coming up. But after the break, I'll get back to this call and I'll explain to you why I don't think it's sustainable. This is InvestTalk. I'm Justin Klein. InvestTalk is a two-way program. It's questions and answers. So it's a place to share your money worries and ideas. Give us a call. 888-99-CHART is how to get through anytime. We're going to get back to Nick in Hayward. You're talking about Annaly Mortgage, correct?
Yep, right.
Yeah. Well, their payout ratio is not bad if you look at the last couple quarters. They had some pretty big increases in earnings, which I'm pretty interested why that is. But if you look at historically, they're up and down when it comes to their earnings. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that they're very leveraged, right? They have a ton of financial leverage, a lot of debt, and that's just the nature of their business. They're kind of like a bank, where they borrow short and they lend, and they borrow short and they tend to buy mortgages, lend a long term, and they leverage that and they leverage that spread. So it's going to be based on the rise and fall of that spread between what the cost it is to borrow short and to invest in the mortgage market. So their earnings are going to be all over the place. If you look at it, I mean, it's by no way, shape, or form consistent. You have good years. 2012 was a great year. Same with 2013. Uh-huh. 2013, their net income was $3.7 billion. 2014, it was negative $800 million. 2015, it was positive $467 million. Then $1.4 billion. So this is not a safe dividend play. And they've cut their dividend, right? It was $2.65 a share in 2010. Now it's down to $1.20.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So in the short term, can they afford it? Yeah.
It's still 9.79, huh?
Yeah. Well, the price is adjusted, right? So the price, if you look at the monthly chart, it was at about $20 a share back in 2008. And even 2009 and 10, it hung around $18 a share. Had a huge drop into about almost $8 a share, and now it's up to about 12 because they had a couple good quarters. So to me, there's not a lot of upside, and I think there's potential downside. Now, could it sustain that dividend for the next year, 2 years? Sure. Is it going to sustain it for 10 years? Very unlikely. It's a high-risk dividend play.
What about the price?
Is it expensive?
Yeah, I mean, would the price go down substantially, or would it hang in right here?
No, I mean, if they cut their dividends, it would just have the same, you know, similar drop that you probably saw from 2012 to 2015, which was about close to a 50% drop. So, depends on how much they cut their dividend. It's just a very high, you know, it's 10% yield. In this market, anything that's yielding 10% is going to be a very high-risk dividend play.
Right.
Can they sustain it short-term? Possibly. And likely. But longer-term, you don't know when the market's going to kind of turn against them. And what happens if you start seeing more defaults in the mortgage market, which certainly could be possible. You know, you go and start going to a recession. Some of their value of their holdings might go down. They have a lot of leverage, so they need to sustain that debt. So it's just a very high-risk dividend play.
Yeah, it's a risky play, yeah.
Yep. Exactly. And maybe you're okay with that.
Thank you, Justin.
No problem, Nick. Thanks for calling. Now, all things now all the ways you can mess up index investing. It's one of our talking points today, and I covered a few more that we're going to get to. But let me do a quick review of the market today. We had the Dow up a solid 21 points, S&P up 4, NASDAQ up 13. Really a very modest up day in the markets. So I continue to believe that we're kind of in a trading range. We haven't gotten the new highs in the NASDAQ or the Russell 2000. And I'm still expecting a market pullback starting late this month. 8899 chart is our number, 8899242278. Let's go to a voicemail.
Hey, Steve or Justin, this is Bobby from Atlanta, Georgia. Hey, would you guys buy Barrick Gold ABX or GDX to start another position in gold? Just want to know your opinion. Thank you. Bye.
The answer is yes. We like Barrick Gold. You know, we're more of buying individual positions as opposed to GDX, which is a fund, index fund of gold miners. And ABX is one of our favorites in the marketplace. We bought it 2015, I believe, around $6 a share. Now it's at $15.71. Certainly pulled back from its recent highs, but I do think it is a good value here. So I like Barrick Gold. ABX is the symbol. 888-99 chart, 888-992-4278. We are at the halfway mark. Plenty of time to get your question answered on today's program. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein. You can reach me right now at 888-992-4278.
Our podcast continues next. The process of investing is more than just picking stocks. Investing begins with savings, of course, and along the way, there are issues about taxes and then estate planning and on and on. KPP Financial clients have a ready resource of information about any and all of these personal financial matters. All they need to do is ask. Managing your money gets more complex every day, and there are more options than the average person could possibly comprehend. And when we're confronted with too many choices, research shows that people put off decisions, important decisions. Most times, that's not productive. KPP Financial's philosophy is the more their clients know, the more successful they'll be, and the more predictable their future will be. KPP Financial, serving the average investor, helping them find solutions. Now let's continue with the podcast. Back to the Money Talk. Financial advisor and licensed realtor Justin Klein is ready for your money question right now. Our direct line is 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278.
Let's go to Thomas in Hayward. How are you doing, Thomas?
Hey, Justin, I'm fine. How are you?
Great. What can I do for you?
Thanks so much for taking my phone call.
Thanks,
you know,
I heard
the caller earlier talking about life insurance, and mm-hmm. it brought up some questions of my own. I'm in a much different situation than he is.
Okay.
I'm younger. I'm 28. I am not married. I'm in a committed relationship, but not married. Not planning on having kids anytime soon. But I was sold a life insurance policy at work. I thought it might be a good thing to have in the event I pass away, and it's something I can give to my partner. But I wanted to get your take on that. What do you think? Do I need life insurance?
Well, I mean, there's need and want. Do you want to take care of your partner? Is that something that it sounds like more of a want than a need? Do they work?
Yes.
Okay. So they can take care of themselves, probably live on their own. Do you know what type of policy it is at work?
That I do not know. I apologize.
Okay. If it's a term policy, it's not costing you too much, then it's probably not a big deal. It also depends on the coverage as well. But usually people who are younger, who don't have anyone that's dependent on their income, you know, like that last caller, his wife couldn't afford their home if he passed away with her salary or her income. So, you know, that to me is a dependent. They're dependent on each other to make money, okay? You doesn't sound like you're in that case where the other person is not dependent on you, don't have any kids, et cetera. So the odds are you don't need it. But you may want to have it if it's a small amount, it's not costing you much. It might not be that big a deal. It just depends on your situation.
Got it. So it would be more of a comfort,
yeah,
knowing that he's taken care of, but probably not necessary because he's already able to work.
Exactly. If he's able to work, he's able to, you know, live on his own and afford his life without you, then there's really no need for that. If you want to give him, you know, and it doesn't cost you too much, it's not sacrificing how much you can put in your 401k or put away in an IRA, et cetera, then it might not be that big a deal. But I would be focusing on getting your full employer match, opening up a Roth IRA, et cetera. Those would be far more important to me than paying for a life insurance policy at your age.
Got it. Very good. All right, I appreciate it. Thank you.
No problem, Thomas. Thanks for calling. 888-99-CHART is our number, 888-992-4278. We have about 20 minutes left in the show, so get your call in sooner rather than later. Now let's talk about some ways that people can screw up index investing. And indexes, we're in the rise of index investing. I've talked about how people are over-indexed. But there are other ways that you can screw up investing or index investing by just having too much indexes. And one is thinking that all index funds are cheap. And that goes with ETFs or mutual funds. And you know, many are available at very low cost. But some charge a ton, like the RIDEX S&P 500 Class C mutual fund. It charges 2.3%. And it's doing the same thing as SPY is doing. Okay, that's why a lot of people have written about how it's the worst mutual fund in the world, and that's just an extreme example. But there are many other mutual funds out there, ETFs out there, that while they're indexing, they're not necessarily low cost, and you can do better elsewhere. Number two, playing the niche indexing game. You know, many investors fall into the trap believing that the more indexes they have in their portfolio, the more diversified they are, the better off they'll be. And in today's world, there are indexes that cover so many things, from robotics to cybersecurity to wind power to organic foods. It's getting too much. Okay, and while diversity is a good thing, you can seriously overdo it. So once you have a solid diversified portfolio, now for individual stocks, you only really need about 25, 30 to be fully diversified. And when you, even with mutual funds and ETFs, you don't need more than, you know, a handful, maybe 6 or 7 to really have a fully diversified portfolio. Obviously it depends on what those are, but you don't need a ton. So a lot of people, you know, they buy a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and they really don't have a plan. So, and a lot of times they overlap. You know, you might have the Qs, the NASDAQ 100, the QQQ, but you also might have a tech-focused fund, like a cybersecurity. And you have a lot of overlap there because they're both tech-focused. So don't buy, and a lot of times what happens is, the new ETFs, the hot, exciting ETFs that are out there and indexes that are out there are there because those industries are very overvalued and because there's so much interest in them. And you've seen that in the past. Back in 2006 and 7, you had housing ETFs come up and you had certain IPOs of particular stocks, and they've really sold off dramatically since then because they IPO'd or they brought to market a fund at just the right time when everything was overvalued. So don't be buying into just the latest hot trend makes you think that you're creating a better, more diversified portfolio, because odds are you're just buying an overvalued sector. And then mistake three, using index funds to gamble rather than invest. And that's kind of along the same lines, you know. Trying to be too cute with your strategy and making poor decisions. So don't think that indexing is the end-all be-all. A lot of people are over-indexed, and it should be a part or can be a part of your strategy, but it should not be all you do, and it should not be bought into as a mantra at a too deep level. Now, do you know the difference between term life and whole life or universal life? We talked about that a little bit earlier. And when you sign up to be an InvestTalk Insider, you gain instant access to an entire library of info sheets, each one prepared by the KPP staff to be informative and straight to the point. Plain talk about important money matters. It's completely free to get checked in right there. You can check that out right there on InvestTalk.com.
Here are the directions for reaching Steve this afternoon with your question. Just call 888-99-CHART, C-H-A-R-T. Have a question about how best to get into the market? Or maybe you're feeling unsure about your current investments. That's what this is all about. This is Invest Talk.
Hi, Steve, Justin. Thank you for your show. Just wanted to know your thoughts on Occidental Petroleum, OXY. I was interested in buying the stocks of this particular company. I was actually looking for dividend growth as well as a value play. Please let me know your thoughts.
All right. He's looking for at Occidental Petroleum for value and a dividend. So let's see if he's going to get both. Occidental Petroleum, they're engaged in the exploration and production of crude oil and natural gas worldwide. They're actually a pretty big player in the shale space. Let's say that. Pretty broadly diversified E&P play, exploration and production. Let me look at their figures. Their profits have fallen dramatically, obviously because of the fallen oil prices. They lost $1.01 a share last year, supposed to make 87 cents a share this year, and $1.55 next year. So if you look at that, it's certainly not a good value at these levels. Its enterprise value to EBITDA is still about 13, even though it's gone down dramatically from, let's see what the high was. Oh, $100 a share back in 2014 to $60 a share, $59.50 at the close today. So it's down about 40%. But earnings hit a high in 2011 of $8.39 a share. So, profits are still down dramatically, more than 40%. So it's not cheap enough for me. Let's look at the dividend. Yields 5%. But its payout ratio is negative because it was losing money last year. And its cash dividend payout ratio, which is based on its cash flows, that's 382%. So it's still creating operating cash flow, even though it lost money. But it looks like it's going to be tough for it to afford that dividend longer term. And I don't really see oil prices substantially moving higher from here. So I'm just going to say no on both accounts. It's not cheap enough for me at these levels, and I don't see that dividend being growing. And I actually see it potentially being cut in the relatively near future. They don't have a ton of debt, even though it has risen over the past few years. So it's not going to be a debt issue. I think they're relatively safe from that perspective. But I don't think it's extremely undervalued. I would say it's maybe slightly overvalued. And the dividend is certainly not going to grow in the near term. So that was Occidental Petroleum. OXY is the symbol. Now, five things rich people confess to sacrificing to get rich. You know, some people inherit wealth and others maybe win the lotto. But most people who are wealthy make tons of sacrifices to get there. And this was a survey of 2,400 people who max out their 401k, who save a lot. And saving is the most important factor to reaching your financial goals. It's not necessarily, it isn't, how much you make on your investments. Because frankly, over the long term, there's only so much difference in returns that you can make from the average investment. You can do better than average, but you're not going to triple the average return of certain asset classes over an extended period of time. It's just never been done. Even Warren Buffett doesn't do that. So saving is the most important factor. So sacrifices need to be made. And what are those sacrifices? Well, the top five are, one is, the out of all these people, 47% drive older vehicles. They're not always owning and buying the latest vehicle. They buy a car and they hold it for 10, 15, 20 years. Number two, they own a modest home. Right? They own a home based on what they can afford, not based on exactly where they want to live and keeping up with the Joneses, right? And those are kind of the top two. Owning the nice car and having a big house is kind of what keeping up with the Joneses starts with. And those who are able to save a ton tend to skimp on both of those, or at least have realistic, more modest expectations. Number three is they don't travel as much as they'd prefer. Notice that they don't travel as much as they prefer. Means they still travel, but not as much as, I mean, I guess everybody would like to prefer to travel more, but certainly skimping out on travel is one of those factors. Number four is tolerate high levels of work-related stress, meaning, hey, job pays well, but I'm socking away a lot of money, and it's stressful, but it's helped me reach my goals. Then lastly, they work so much that it takes time away from social life and family, which is kind of, those last two are kind of connected. So they give a few examples in this study about, buying lower-end Hondas and keeping them for 15 years. That goes to the number one, driving an older vehicle. Others, buying a smaller house and having less maintenance costs of a large house and a large yard and large utility bills. You know, large houses come with large utility bills. Others say keeping housing costs at less than a quarter of their take-home pay. Think about that. Think about what your housing costs are and what your quarter of your take-home pay. Odds are you're likely spending more on your housing related costs, and that's all in, from mortgage or rent to utilities, taxes, insurance, etc. It's a hard feat, but it's maybe something you should consider focusing on. And remember, this isn't all about all sacrificing everything. You can still splurge, it's just splurging on the right things. It's not that you can't have that Starbucks, and that Starbucks is going to kill your savings goal, but it's the people who have coffee every day at Starbucks and a nice lunch and a nice car that they spend maybe $1,000 a month on and a nice house or apartment, you know, they're et cetera. It's all those things that add up. So try to have realistic expectations of what you can afford and make sure you're spending less than you make. And that's the simplest goal, the simplest strategy to getting where you want to be. You know, this is called Invest Talk, and we talk about investing a lot on this show, and that's the sexier thing to talk about and discuss and think about. But frankly, saving is equally important. And the show could easily be called Save Talk, and it would be just as effective. So 888-99-CHART is our number, 888-992-4278. We're going into the last segment, and that's our main job, is to answer your questions. So we're going to do that after this break. Give us a call at 888-99-CHART. That's 888-992-4278.
Hi, Steve. My name is Evelyn. I would like to know if you have any information about this stock. It's called NVIDIA. The spelling is N is in Nancy, V is in Victor, I for ice cream, David, ice cream, apple. I do not have the symbol, but I believe they make chips for driverless cars. And I was wondering, is this the kind of stock you would like to have in your own portfolio? Also, is this a good time to invest in that stock? Thank you.
All right, she's looking at NVIDIA, and while there is some excitement over the driverless car industry, really this stock has been driven up dramatically by Bitcoin and the cryptocurrency world. And the reason is, if you understand it, is there are miners. There are Bitcoin miners and Ethereum miners, all the different cryptocurrencies. And whoever, when there's a transaction, whoever solves the key to that transaction quickly, and that's usually done with computers, and the fastest chip that can do that can solve that key, and it's kind of hard to explain, but basically you get rewarded if you're the first to figure out that key, and you're rewarded with Bitcoin or whatever that cryptocurrency is. So people are spending money on NVIDIA chips to mine Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies. So there's a lot driven by that. And this is a growth name, and it's extremely overvalued, extremely overvalued. So you're too late to the game, too late to the game on NVIDIA. I actually think it's very, very close to a top. It looked like it topped out earlier last month, and we're seeing a retest of that high. Now, if it can break above the high of 168 and change, say it's 169, actually it's high. High is 168.50. If we can break above that and close, right now it's at 160.63, so we're sort of pretty close to it. Then it might have another leg higher, but I don't think so. All the indicators are telling me that it won't break that to new highs, and I think it's a terrible time. Actually, I would love to short NVIDIA. I would not be buying NVDA. 8899 chart is our number. Let's get to one more question before the day is done.
Hi, Steve, Justin. This is Sanket from New Jersey. I love your show. Just wanted to get your thoughts on ETF UVXY. I mean, considering the current market volatility, was interested in buying this ETF. Let me know what you think about it. Thanks.
All right, he's looking at UVXY. This is a inverse volatility ETF. So basically the goal, or sorry, not inverse, but it is long volatility. And it's been decimated because volatility continues to be subdued. I do think that will reverse. When it will reverse, I'm not sure. I think it will start later this month. And you would want to own UVXY when that is. Now, this is a trading vehicle, and you don't want to hold it for very long because over time, it should continue to go lower and lower and lower, and there's a lot of complexities in why, but basically, this is a terrible long-term investment. This is a trading vehicle only. So if you see, for whatever reason, you think volatility will pick up and you want to play that, this can be a vehicle for you, and you can make a lot of money in a very short period of time. But you do not want to hold this for more than maybe a week, 2 weeks at the absolute max. You do not want to hold this any length of time. That was UVXY. That is the ProShares Ultra VIX short-term ETF. Well, we have 1 minute left in the show, and I want to tell you quickly why retailers did so well today. And this is kind of rare because they've been really smashed lately. But we're seeing a lot of value in the retail space because brick and mortar is being shunned, that it's going by the way of the buggy whip. And I think that's just a little crazy. There's a lot of great companies, and one of them that we actually picked up for managed accounts was Target recently. And they were up 5%, nearly 5% today because they raised their guidance. And that helped other companies like JCPenney and Macy's and Urban Outfitters, etc. And so I think this is a sector where there's a lot of opportunity that you can find some good stocks to pick up. Time's up for this hour. A reminder, Steve will be in San Jose next week on the 18th for portfolio reviews, or he can meet you via Skype or FaceTime or phone from anywhere. To reserve your hour for an individual portfolio review, just go to investtalk.com, click on the Invest Talk tab. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein, Chief Executive Officer of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Steve Peasley and the whole KPP family, thank you for being with us. Let's get together again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.